This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Miravis Ace Fungicide from Syngenta for wheat growers who want to get a head start on head scab control.
Welcome to chilly North Fork, Nebraska for the Northeast Nebraska Farm and Equipment Show. And speaking of chilly, single digits here in Norfolk, and that's downright balmy compared to the chilly reaction of the grain markets to the signing of Phase 1 and the passage of USMCA in the Senate. If this is how the markets are going to react, I don't know if we can afford any more deals.
Live from the 33rd Annual Northeast Nebraska Farm and Equipment Show in balmy Norfolk, Nebraska, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Luke Beckman from Central Valley Ag and Kevin Papp, president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures checks in. I'm frozen newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, welcome back to Norfolk, Nebraska, the Northeast Nebraska Farm and Equipment Show. We're really glad to be here. And we're here thanks to WJAG. We're here thanks to TNL Irrigation. Mm-hmm. Successful farmers work hard and smart. Davis, did you know that?
I did know that, yes.
All right.
That's why I was never a successful farmer.
I gotcha. The smart choice is in Pivot Irrigation is TNL. Like no other, call your local dealer or TNL Irrigation Company today. And you know what? I got to give a shout out to Big Iron Realty.
Big Iron Realty.
Yep. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have a place to sit right now.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, so we borrowed some chairs. Thank you, Big Iron.
Are they big iron chairs?
They are. They are.
All right, sounds comfortable.
We're gonna go with that. Wow. The reaction that we're seeing in these ag markets to the signing of the phase one of the deal with China, Senate passage of USMCA. Uh-huh. Now it's off to the president's desk, where I would imagine he's going to sign the thing just as quickly as he could, or he could try to do something like this. Mm-hmm. What he might do is pull a Pelosi on Pelosi.
Oh, geez.
Okay, you know, what he could do is decide that he's going to wait until the impeachment trial starts, and then at the very moment that the impeachment trial is starting, that's when he gets the president of Mexico and gets Canada together in the same room, and they sit down and they sign the agreement and have a great big ceremony all about it. I can tell you right now, CNN would be on the impeachment trial, and Fox News would be covering the trade agreement.
Well, there were some snarky remarks made from the podium yesterday by our beloved president.
Yes, there
about
were.
About those folks being there. You know, if you need to go and vote right now, you go ahead. I'd rather have you doing that than sitting there listening to me talk.
Wow. That's right. Yeah. It was really interesting. No doubt about it. Hey, we got a lot of ground to cover. Let's go ahead and get to the news.
You bet. Well, as you said, the U.S. Senate this morning passed the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and sent it off to President Trump to sign. The response from U.S. commodity groups was quick and unified. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association said, quote, "The ratification of USMCA is a crucial win for all U.S. beef producers and a reassurance that U.S. beef will continue to have unrestricted, duty-free access to Canada and Mexico." The National Pork Producers Council said, quote, "USMCA provides U.S. pork producers with certainty in two of our largest export markets." And Chip from the National Corn Growers Association, quote, "NCGA thanks the U.S. senators who voted to ensure corn farmers will continue to have access to our largest and most reliable markets." There you go.
Yeah. Very good. That quote came from Kevin Ross, mm-hmm. who is the president of NCGA. I know that he was at the White House yesterday. I know that he was very excited about the agreement, and boy, I tell you, it's this USMCA side of things. It's every bit as big as Phase One with China, mm-hmm. and it's not getting the attention that it deserves, I believe.
Yep. Export sales of wheat in the weekend of January 9 totaled nearly 651,000 metric tons for delivery in the current marketing year. Wheat has been on the defensive since March. SRW futures topped resistance at the summer highs early in yesterday's trade. Some traders say China's comments that it will buy U.S. ag commodities based on needs and competitive prices makes it less likely the country will purchase much U.S. wheat in the weeks ahead. March hard red futures were 11.75 cents lower, 484.75. March soft red futures fell 8 cents to 565.25. March spring wheat 6 cents lower, 550.25. Chip.
Yeah, U.S. wheat prices just aren't competitive with the rest of the world right now.
Yep. Well, export sales of corn in the weekend of January 9 totaled nearly 992,000 metric tons, with 785,000 for delivery in the current marketing year and 207,000 tons for delivery in 2021. Yeah. The old crop sales tally topped trade expectations, but it failed to provide support for corn futures. Today's late session selling broke support at the 100-day moving average and at last week's low. The close below last week's low points the March contract to a test of support at the December low of 371. March corn futures 12 cents lower, 375.5. July corn dropped 11.5 cents to 389. December 2020 corn at 394, down 8.5 cents on the day. Corn gets the stinker award, Chip.
Yeah, it really did. Is that music right there the opposite of the corn conga?
It absolutely is, and it's what the corn market deserves today.
That's exactly right. Keep rolling. We'll talk more about the corn market with Luke.
Bean sales in the weekend of January 9 totaled 711,500 metric tons, which lined up with trade expectations. Soybean meal sales of 375,000 metric tons easily topped trade expectations and hit a new marketing year high. That was followed with a daily export sales announcement of 180,000 metric tons to the Philippines for delivery in the current marketing year. Members of the National Oilseed Processors Association reported they crushed 174.8 million bushels of beans in December. Chip, that topped trade expectations by more than 3 million bushels. Yeah. March bean futures 4.75 lower, 924 even. July fell 4.25, 950 even. November beans 956.25, down 2.5 cents on the day. Weathered the storm there, soybeans.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we'll get to the livestock closes at some point. It's just suffice it to say that everything closed lower in the livestock today as well.
Yeah.
Let's go to Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. Get some perspective on today's price action. Oliver, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It was a little bit of an ugly day, but there's certainly better days ahead of us, I think.
Too much good news. I mean, markets can't handle this much good news with the signing of phase one, and then we get USMCA done. I mean, it's got to clearly be that there was buying in anticipation of these things, and now that we've got it done, we're selling it off.
Undoubtedly, and it goes back to the old saying, you know, buy the rumor, sell the fact. And if you recall, you know, we rallied the market, being specifically 75 cents over the month of December. So a large part of that was priced in, and we weren't able to get really any new catalyst to get us out above there. On top of that, we've got weather in South America that looks halfway friendly, and that's not doing any favors for the bulls here either. So you're just seeing a little bit of a breakdown and some pullbacks. 920 to 922 represents a gap from December 15th, a key Fibonacci retracement on the 100-day moving average. That's an area that we want to hold. The break and close below there might take us another 10 or 15 cents lower. If we were to get that extended break a little closer to that $9 handle, I've got to believe there's probably pretty good value down at those prices.
Okay, real quick, the hog market really didn't rally into the phase one or USMCA, and it's still feeling the pressure. What's going on there?
It's just an ugly chart picture. Luckily, enough, earlier in the week, we were able to defend those December lows, 65.40. That's going to be a big barrier. If we break the low there, this February chart looks ugly. We can go see those August lows at 63.67. What we want to see, if you're playing to the long side, is a close back above 68. But really, the big barrier has been 70. 70 is the big line in the sand. It's a little bit of ways away. So first target, 68, just one day at a time.
Got it. Thank you, Oliver. Appreciate it. We're live at the Northeast Nebraska Farm Show in Norfolk, Nebraska.
After getting over the stress of last season, wheat growers are hoping 2020 brings better weather and lower disease pressure. Today, I'm talking with Sarah Jahant, Agronomy Service Representative for Syngenta. Sarah, let's take a look back on the 2019 growing season. What's your verdict on how last year's weather impacted disease pressure and how it could impact next season?
In 2019, we started out really wet, and we got quite a bit of rain during flowering, which has an impact on the incidence of head scab. And that early rainfall did affect how much disease we saw in the wheat. because most of the diseases beyond even head scabs, say septoria, powdery mildew, those diseases are dependent on having moisture. So we did see some relatively high levels of septoria. We did see powdery mildew. And keep in mind that all of these diseases I've mentioned overwinter on crop residue. So as we go into this coming year, say on our corn in 2019, we have relatively high levels of fusarium. That inoculum load that was high in 2019 would provide a disease base for our infections in 2020. So a high-level disease in the preceding year would lead to a high level of inoculum defect the following year. So in 2020, I would expect relatively high levels of septoria for our wheat crop, powdery mildew potentially, as well as fusarium.
Thank you, Sarah. That was Sarah Jahan, Agronomy Service Representative with Syngenta. We'll be hearing more from her next week about what growers can do to better prepare for this season.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
The first 24 to 48 hours after planting are critical to reaching the full yield potential in your seed. BioForge Advance from Stoller helps crops guard against weather-related stress that robs yield. Get your crops off to a great start with BioForge Advanced Seed Treatment this season. BioForge Advance can also be used in furrow, at planting, or in foliar applications. For winning yields in every field, start with Stoller and BioForge Advanced. Learn more at StollerUSA.com. Attention landowners and farmers, the Conservation Reserve Program, CRP, is now open. CRP is a great alternative for difficult-to-farm acres. It improves farm profitability and delivers high-quality wildlife habitat, cleaner water, and healthier soils. The CRP sign-up is going on right now, but it ends on February 28th. Find a local Pheasants Forever biologist at pheasantsforever.org/CRP or visit your local USDA service center. Farm the best, CRP the rest. This message brought to you by Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America. And
then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
When you think of the seasons of agriculture, you naturally think of planting and harvesting. I would also point out there is a learning season. It's coming up. It's just ahead for you producers. And there's an excellent opportunity to learn at the Farm Futures Business Summit. It'll be at the end of January at Coralville, Iowa. The theme this year is 2020 Clear Insights for a Profitable Future. It's the Farm Futures Business Summit, Coralville, Iowa. Go to farmfuturessummit.com for information.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
We're going to find out, aren't we? We're going to find out what else we need to know. Real quick, go ahead and hit us with that livestock news, Davis.
Yeah, you bet. February live cattle futures spiked sharply lower in early trade, but did recover to close mid-range and back on top of 126. February cattle futures 47.5 cents lower, 126.12.5. April cattle futures fell 107.5 to 126.42.5. March feeders slipped 35 cents, 144.82.5. And on the snout side, the positive developments on the trade agreements could not help the grain markets the past 2 days. And hog futures have also put in a disappointing price performance. February hogs were a buck lower at 66.87 and a half. April hogs a buck 20 lower, 73.77 and one half. What is the deal, Chip?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like Oliver said, we've done enough chart damage now that you got to wonder exactly where or when or how we're going to find a low in this hog market. So we need something to stem the tide of selling that is taking place in lean hogs right now. Okay, welcome back to Norfolk, Nebraska and the Northeast Nebraska Farming Equipment Show. Thanks to WJAG and to T&L Irrigation for having us out here. Really appreciate it. We're talking today with Luke Beckman. Luke is with Central Valley Ag up in Elgin, right, Luke?
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you again. First time you were on, we were over here doing one of these things.
I know. Davis couldn't understand why we call it Norfolk.
Right.
Norfolk. That's what I remember.
Yeah. Well, Luke has been on several times since then, and thanks again for making the time to come over here. Right now, we've got a special guest with us. We've got Kevin Papp. Kevin is the president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau, and he joins us right now. Kevin, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you, my friend?
Doing very good, Chip. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you for making time. Kevin, it had to be, like, crazy cool to be in the White House yesterday to witness the signing of the Phase 1 agreement with China.
Well, certainly a historical event, something we've been working hard a long time, and really appreciate all the teams at the administration that, what was it, something like 33 meeting sessions that they had on agriculture to get where we are, being in the room with the president, the vice president, many cabinet members, senior officials, a lot of elected officials, and ag and other business leaders. It certainly was a very historic day and another good step to going in the right direction for trade.
Yeah, and Liu He, having the Chinese representation there to sign the agreement, it held all the signals of a major event. It had to feel that way when you were there, right?
It was a major event, and it was a major event with a lot of other good news. We had a great Chinese delegation. They were well represented, a lot of media interested, not only from the United States, but Chinese media as well.
Yeah. You know, and maybe the most important guy in the room might have been U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer.
Boy, I tell you, that the team that he's got, I probably had the best place in the room, and that was back with a lot of the senior staff from USTR and Economic Council and others that, quite frankly, they shared with me they hadn't been to bed yet. They'd been up all night working on the final details and getting ready for the event. So really want to thank all those folks, starting with the ambassador all the way down, the team to get us where we are today.
Yep. Now, the markets haven't responded too well to this agreement, though, Luke, have they?
No, really. And lots of folks have talked about it, but buy the rumor, sell the fact. We saw the headlines. Didn't see volume details yesterday in terms of how much corn, how much wheat, how much soybeans, protein, all of that. So markets like clarity. They like certainty. We didn't quite see that yesterday. And, you know, what's the new line in the sand and the date on the calendar that we're going to get to? Right. To give us that information. So markets just deflating after a nice run-up in December.
Yeah, Kevin, how confident was the group there? How confident is that group collectively that China is going to live up to the terms of the agreement?
Well, I think everyone in the room knows that exports are critical to our economic success in agriculture. And the fundamentals that we need to keep reminding ourselves is China's 20% of the world's population, but we got to remember their middle class, their growing middle class is larger than our entire U.S. population. They're the world's largest pork consumer. A third of the world's soybeans are consumed in China. So hopefully we can be part of that process and get some of those markets back.
Yeah. You know, even without the agreement, we were going to be part of it. And Kevin, there's some criticism out there that says, doggone it, you know, if President Trump wouldn't have blown this whole thing up to begin with, there wouldn't have been the need for all the negotiations and there wouldn't have been the need for an agreement like this. But dang, Kevin, I said it this morning. I'll say it again. I got this from John Donnelly. Delaney. That China's trade policy was that of a pirate. You know, you just steal. You steal what you can, and if you can't steal it, you burn it down. And that's basically what China was doing, and this trade agreement will prevent that going forward.
You know, a lot of concerns, and we'll keep an eye on those. But we've got to remember that this is more than purchases. This is also about trade rules. We're going to have some advancements in biotechnology and some of those other trade barriers that we constantly have to battle. And, you know, we made gains that way as well, and we need to remember that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Another one that you've been working on and working on hard, I know, Kevin, USMCA. I mean, back-to-back days, you're getting really good news for Minnesota farmers.
Yeah, we're for all farmers, and not just farmers, but rural communities that are so dependent on export markets, and just having the ability to have open markets, rules-based negotiated agreements is just critical, and we appreciate that. And hopefully, if the stars line up, maybe we'll get some better, more good news from the president this weekend at our AFPF annual meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Farm Journal News Director John Harith is going to be down there. So when you spot him, go ahead and hit him up for a steak.
All right, I'll count that.
Very good. Thank you so much for calling in, Kevin. Say hey to the guys for me, and we'll talk again real soon.
All right, have a great day. Thanks.
Kevin. You too. That's Kevin Papp, president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Luke, this USMCA deal, everybody wants to talk about all the export demand with China, all the export demand from Japan. Mexico's our biggest buyer of corn. This was unbelievably important.
Yeah, just to take the uncertainty out of the market that we got it done, it got to the Senate, you know, and the market fully expected that to happen once it got there. So no surprises today, and you scratch your head, you know, why is corn down 12 cents? But, you know, again, we didn't expect the USMCA to have issues in the Senate, so more ceremonial than anything.
Yep.
But huge deal, you know, to have these trade agreements signed and inked gives us great momentum going forward. I think there's just still question marks in terms of, all right, it's on paper, but let's see some action behind it. I think the cash markets are going to have to be the first thing that tell us that something's actually happening. You know, you're going to have to watch export values. You can look at rail freight. You know, if you see those values start to spike, you know there's something going on. Where there's smoke, there's fire. So far, cash markets aren't showing us that. I will say yesterday, rail freight spiked ahead of the Phase 1 agreement under expectations that, hey, there might be something here. Yep. Unfortunately, it was just a blip. So we'll have to see if there's some something to that.
Farmer movement of corn, it's been nothing spectacular in January, has it?
Nothing crazy in January. We felt like post-harvest, you know, Thanksgiving to Christmas was a short window. You know, it really felt like a lot of business had to get condensed there. So truck corn movement in Nebraska, or at least the Western Corn Belt, was pretty decent. End users probably paid more than they wanted to get things moving. But grain movement up to this point has been decent. It's slowed down here once we've turned the calendar.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to take to... The kind of price action that we've seen the last 2 days isn't going to move any corn.
Not at all. At all. I mean,
and I really don't care what basis does with that.
Absolutely. I mean, flat price. We were, you know, you're talking 370 to 380 in a lot of spots, you know, and guys have been there and done that. So, you know, we're waiting for something better. And, you know, basis and spreads will have to do some work if the flat price is going to behave the way it did today.
Yeah, absolutely. And beans, there's not a lot of beans moving either, is there?
No, there's not, and there's really, you know, the beans aren't in the country like they were a year ago. We've definitely felt that in the Western Corn Belt. The stocks report confirmed as much, which was not surprising. But farmers aren't storing beans on farm like they were a year ago, not to the extent. So the carryout 475 compared to 909 the year before. Yep. I mean, we did a really nice job cutting that thing back.
Exactly. Okay, here in northeast Nebraska, we're kind of right on the edge of where there's some quality issues further north on this corn market. I want to talk about what that might mean for markets, local markets out here in Nebraska next. And what's next? Now that we've got phase one, we got USMCA, what are the markets focus on next? We'll cover that with Luke Beckman.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Calling all farmers and ag professionals, want to maximize return on investment for every acre on the farm? If so, now is the time to register for the Precision Ag Workshop at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Join me, AgriTalk's Chip Flory, to learn how precision ag data can boost bottom line profits and wildlife habitat. Enjoy farmer-led panel discussions and interactive breakout sessions. Register now at pheasantfest.org for the Precision Ag Workshop presented by John Deere on February 14th at the Minneapolis Convention Center.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us now. Dan, what's the market move that matters most today?
Hey, Chip, I'm looking at March high-grade copper futures today. The copper market suffered a sizable drop from around $3 per pound to the 240 area through mid-2019, but turned higher last September. The subsequent advance has been pretty impressive, carrying the March future up to 287.35 at Tuesday's close. That represented an eight-month high. However, as with the several other markets, it seemingly suffered a buy-the-rumor-sell-the-fact setback yesterday and today after the signing of the Phase 1 trading agreement. One could certainly argue that it's now set to retest support at its 10 and 20-day moving averages around 285.5 in the days ahead. Still, the chart suggests the copper market will continue rising in the spring.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught. Pro Farmer members, get your daily advice updates at profarmer.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
When you think of the seasons of agriculture, you naturally think of planting and harvesting. I would also point out there is a learning season. It's coming up. It's just ahead for you producers. And there's an excellent opportunity to learn at the Farm Futures Business Summit. It'll be at the end of January at Coralville, Iowa. The theme this year is 2020 Clear Insights for a Profitable Future. It's the Farm Futures Business Summit, Coralville, Iowa. Go to farmfuturessummit.com for information.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready, the 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Somebody broke into the Cool Bumps folder. This is an oldie.
Yeah, it is, man. Little Chris Ledoux. Love it. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk and to Norfolk, Nebraska. Thank you so much to WJAG and TNL for making it possible for us to be out here and enjoying the Northeast Nebraska Farm and Equipment Show. We're talking today with Luke Beckman. Luke is with Central Valley Ag in Elgin. And before we get back to it, go ahead and recap, even though they're terrible closes, go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Yeah, real quick, and don't shoot the messenger, Chip. I'm just reading the page.
You're not sitting in a room with farmers, man.
No, I know, and it seems much safer. March hard red futures 11 3/4 cents lower, 484 3/4. March soft red off 8 cents, 565 1/4. March corn futures were 12 cents lower, 375 1/2. Deese 2020 corn closed at 394, down 8 1/2 cents on the day. March soybean futures 4 3/4 cents lower, 924 even. November beans closed at 956 1/4, down 2 1/2 cents today. On the livestock side, February cattle futures 47 1/2 lower, 126.12 1/2. March feeders slipped 35 cents to 144.82 1/2. And February lean hogs were a dollar lower, 66.87 1/2. That is your quick market recap. We'll get them back tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Luke. Luke, how was the crop here in eastern Nebraska? It was really pretty decent, wasn't it?
Yeah, productive crop. Certainly some issues here and there, but even if you look at USDA numbers, the size of the crop in Nebraska was the same as a year ago.
Okay.
Yield was down, acres were up.
Yep.
So good crop in Nebraska. You know, I think some of that got planted late, maybe some lighter test weights in spots, but overall the Nebraska producer probably should feel pretty good about corn production. Soybeans are a little more variable, but I heard some pretty big numbers on beans as well.
Yeah. The area that you pull from, boy, it is right on the south edge of the area where quality is really a question for us going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, really eastern South Dakota, you know, southeast South Dakota had some issues. If you look at principal crop acres in South Dakota that mm-hmm. were compared 2018 to 19, you know, they were down, what, 3 million some acres in principal crops. So they had a lot of issues there. And the crop that did get in, some of it's still up there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And the stuff that came off was really wet, you know, didn't mature. So you're dealing with a light test weight crop. You know, usually when you dry a crop, the test weight goes up, and it didn't, mm-hmm. you know, as they ran that through dryers. So a lot of quality issues, a lot of FM issues. You're not really dealing with number two corn at that point.
Right. See, and that's so concerning for this cash market, guys, because if it was number two corn and met the export specs, when we're talking about China, it's put it on a train and send it west. Are we going to have to flip-flop some supplies?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't meet spec that, or you're going to have... you know, you're going to have some premium plays, you know, just for number two corn.
Yeah.
And they'll reach south. They'll start to come into Nebraska to find some of that. And you might replace some of those, you know, off-grade stocks and run that through a processing facility domestically.
Yep.
So you might see some weird, you know, grain flows happening. Maybe some of that South Dakota crop come south into the Nebraska processing markets or feed markets, those types of things.
Exactly. And then you send the number two corn north and try to get it on a rail as quick as you can.
Yeah, and the question is going to be, how deep is that demand?
Right.
You know, because corn,
corn
exports are a total dog this year, unfortunately, and really the worst since 2012, which I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an anomaly because of the drought that we had. So corn exports are just, I mean, they're just struggling.
Yeah.
And that's rooted in Ukraine. That's rooted in Brazil, Argentina. I mean, just really good corn crops globally the last 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah. The new crop corn coming out of Brazil, it's far from a done deal because a lot of it hasn't even been planted yet, that second crop corn.
Mm-hmm.
But if they've got a big crop down there again, they're going to be competitive. There's no question. Ukraine's going to be competitive. But doggone it, have at 1.775 billion bushels, is that as low as we can get with the estimate this year?
I don't know about this year. You'd like to think that next year we build on that.
Yeah.
I think that's the big question with phase one. You know, are we going to take corn? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a false demand to refill state reserves, you know, mm-hmm. for China. And that's just a big mystery. You know, how deep is that hole that we could fill? That's a big question. The other thing that could be positive, though, and you really look at the U.S., you know, we export 13 to 14% of our production annually in the form of corn exports. You know, South America, you know, Argentina's, you know, 65%.
Yeah.
You know, Brazil's a third of their crop.
Yeah.
Ukraine's 85% of the corn that they raise goes to export. So the U.S. is adding value before they ship it out, you know, and that's in the form of ethanol or protein. So I really think phase one and USMCA has the opportunity to see the U.S. as really a country that can add value to that commodity before they ship it out. It's really a value add play with ethanol. It'd be really nice to see some ethanol starting to go to China. I think that's where you get like your ethanol demand on the balance sheet to perk up a couple hundred million bushels. There's capacity in that industry to do it.
Yeah.
If the margins are better, you know, and then just feed demand, which is the, you know, the mysterious one every year
right.
with these stocks reports. But yeah, protein consumption, I mean, feed consumption is really good in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It is. On China with their, ethanol plans, supposedly they've abandoned their plans to get to E10 in every gallon that's used over there in an effort to fight the pollution problems that they've got. And one of the reasons they said they went away from it is because their stocks have tightened up. You look at the USDA report, and it suggests that they've still got about 200 million metric tons. According to China, they've only got about 50, about 50 million tons. I who do you believe, and how do you understand how that's going to influence going forward?
Yeah, and you know, that's the tough part. And I think the USDA, that's why they have it broke out on their balance sheet to say world less China. You know, so let's get a picture of numbers we're actually confident in, and then there's the China number. But you're right. If you look at like state auctions for what they've auctioned out of state reserves the last couple of years, you know, they had a pretty big year 2 years ago where they sold a lot of, you know, government-owned inventory. And then in the last year, it's really come down.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to read the tea leaves and say, well, they're not selling it because they don't have it,
right?
You know, maybe there is a big hole that we could fill from a strategic reserve standpoint. You know, and I think that's good for demand nearby. You know, but what does it do 5 years down the road once we fill that bucket?
Right.
You know, I think that's kind of the big question with just corn exports in general.
Yeah. You know, on this ethanol issue, we lost, what, a third of the sugar beet crop this year where it just went unharvested. You look at the sugar price down in Brazil, it's creeping up. I don't know if it's discouraging ethanol production from sugar yet, but it's creeping up. If we could get that world sugar price up to the point that they would start using corn to make ethanol instead of sugar to make ethanol, or just import ethanol from the U.S. down into Brazil, that would help us out. And I think the sugar market is one of those markets that we're going to have, that we don't normally pay a whole lot of attention to, but we're going to have to watch it more closely in the months ahead.
Well, all these fringe crops. I mean, you talk about sugar in Brazil. I mean, wheat has been that crop that we look at in the U.S. all the time because, you know, look at what the Dakotas have done, you know, with their crop rotations in the last decade. And corn acres are up, bean acres are up, wheat acres are down, right? So you need these competing crops to kind of keep the pressure off of, you know, corn and beans.
Hemp!
There you go.
Hemp's going to do it.
10 acres at a time.
That's right. You know, I said that we were going to talk about what's next, what the market is going to focus on next. And I think we've been talking about it, right? And it's the demand picture.
Yeah, you know, you just don't have a timeline for when are we going to learn more about the specifics of phase one. And, you know, I tend to believe it's going to be more, the cash market's going to inform us first.
Yes.
Feels like there's not going to be a grand parade where we talk about it. It's just going to be, hey, corn exports have ticked up X percent over the last month. It feels like maybe there's some demand there and you're going to start to see that demand pull. At that point, then the USDA begins to acknowledge it and, you know, put it in their monthly S&Ds.
Right.
But we'll start to flip the page here pretty quick to 2021 balance sheet.
Right.
And, you know, planting intentions
and
at the end
acres.
Of March.
Yeah.
It's coming. Principal crop acres were down, what, 16 million acres between 18 and 19? So you're going to have that bearish, you know, feeling from the supply side, right? Because we didn't get them planted.
Yeah.
We didn't get them planted last year. Planting intentions are going to say, you know, they're going to plant 94 million acres of corn. You're going to put a trend line yield on it. You know, so you can extrapolate the numbers and start to get to a carryout number for 2021. And that'll happen in March. And, you know, then the spring has to happen.
Yeah.
And I think most people in the room would probably say that, yeah, but they're wet up there. Those acres aren't going to get planted. So spring has to happen. And typically that uncertainty gives us the rally, right?
Yep. Those guys up there are telling us that some of these acres are not going to get planted.
Right.
It's a different world. There's not enough slope to move that water around and get rid of it. What's the attitude among guys right now, Luke?
Oh, I think that, there's a lot of optimism over, the trade deals. And I think there was an expectation that we would see, front month corn get over $4, and I want to sell $4 corn. That seems to be a number we always hear about locally. We didn't get to those prices, at least nearby. So to see the reaction today, is a little bit disheartening. But I think the farmers did a good job with the bean market this year. We had that rally at harvest. It seems like a lot of beans got let go there.
Yep.
Producers were factoring in their MFP 2.0 payment, to make the bean market work. And overall corn prices, you just look year over year or compared to 2 years ago, and we're just in a much better situation. So I think there's optimism out there that 2020 is going to be a better year than 2019.
Yeah, and the first thing that everybody's going to lean on for a better year is weather. We can't repeat what we had in 2019. But when we talk about planning for 2020, that insurance price that's going to be set in February for corn and for soybeans, it matters. Mm-hmm. It matters a lot to how willing lenders are going to be to finance some of the operations out there. Let's talk a little bit about that. And the other thing that I want to talk about, you mentioned it, 2020. 404 D's corn looks pretty good right now.
Three, two, one. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
In today's uncertain ag environment, it can be easy to lose your focus. At Commodity Classic, you can sharpen your vision for the future of your farm with insight from well-known thought leaders in agriculture, eye-opening innovation and technology, and the sheer energy of being around thousands of positive, talented farmers. There's no doubt the 2020 Commodity Classic will help you see your future clearly. Plan now to be in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Just like the weather, crop insurance keeps changing. And that's why Farm Credit Services of America employs full-time crop insurance officers who understand those changes, deliver the best options to your farm, and the coverage you expect. The weather can be surprising. Your crop insurance shouldn't be. Discover the difference with a no-cost, no-obligation crop insurance plan review from Farm Credit Services of America. Learn more by calling 800-884-FARM.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. Yes. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Got equipment to sell privately but tired of scams and hassles? Then list it for sale on machinerypete.com, the simple and secure way to buy and sell equipment online. Reach millions of buyers nationwide. Connect with legitimate buyers. Get pricing guidance. Don't wait. Sell it yourself on machinerypete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com and click on Sell Mine.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
You see things differently. You are an innovator. You think out of the box. You are an American farmer, and you can win the Global Hemp Innovation Challenge. When food, fuel, medicine, feed, and fiber are being made hemp-based, we all win. To enter the Hemp Innovation Challenge or to learn more, call 888-222-4656. Whenever your hemp idea arrives, day or night, 24/7. That number again is 888-222-4656. Submission deadline is January 17th. Go online to www.hempinnovationchallenge.org to learn more.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Well, Justin there for you. You there, Davis?
Doesn't sound a thing like Timberlake. What are we talking about here?
It's Justin Moore, you moron.
Justin Moore, of course. I thought you were referring to Justin Timberlake.
I am not. I just got a note from the newly retired and legendary Ken Root.
Yes.
Ken was the original host of AgriTalk.
That's right.
He's a good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And he sent me a note that says the first AgriTalk remote in 1994 was done in Norfolk, Nebraska.
In 1994.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
In 1994. And here we are. We're back at it. We're back at it. Very cool. Very cool. Welcome back to Norfolk. It's the Northeast Nebraska Farm and Equipment Show. We're talking with Luke Beckman. Luke, there was a question from the back of the room that came in during one of the breaks, and it's on the Chinese negotiations, which are obviously ongoing. How many phases are there going to be? It sounds like now there's going to be two phases. Part of the reason for that is because I think there's more done in phase one than what they anticipated would be. Doesn't mean that it's easier sledding on phase two, because this is when we really get into the weeds on trying to convince China to abandon their pirate ways and to quit stealing and to quit roadblocking and to quit throwing up artificial trade barriers so there's a lot of work to be done in phase two. So I don't want to suggest that it's going to be easy in any stretch. Also, it sounds like President Trump wants to wait until after he's reelected in November to,
there seems to be some strategy in there.
There does, doesn't there? Yeah. So whether or not we get to phase two or not might depend who's in the White House. And does it change direction? The guys here in the room in Norfolk you guys are pretty good political strategists. Either that or you've been watching the BS that's been happening in D.C. long enough to understand that if it's not President Trump that's back in the White House, that whoever is in there next will take it, will take some of the work that's been done, and then talk about, oh, all we had to do was change directions on this one. And they were going in a completely wrong direction, but now we've got it fixed, and it's way better, way better. Does that sound familiar with USMCA? Boy, House Speaker Pelosi, once she got her hands on it. And you know what? She did make it better. She absolutely did make it better. On some of the labor issues in Mexico and so on. And so, okay, tip of the hat to Speaker Pelosi on that one, but there's a lot of it was done by Robert Lighthizer and the Trump team. There's no question about that. So this corn market, new crop corn market, 394, is that what it was, Davis?
Let's see.
I think it was something.
In the D's you're talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, 394 down 8.5 on the day.
Mm-hmm. Boy, 404 from a few days ago looks pretty good all of a sudden, doesn't it, Luke?
It does. You know, the last couple years, we feel like we've been in this boat where we get the chance to look at $4 futures early. Yep. We get a spike in the summer. You know, last year, a little more aggressive than the previous few. But, you know, we get the chance to do it. And how many people in the room would sell $4 March futures today if you could? Mm-hmm. And all the hands go up.
Yep.
And, you know, so why not lock in, you know, some D's 20 corn at $4 when we get that chance? And I think a lot of people have. Honestly, a lot of people we work with say, well, we'll dip a toe in the water. We'll get started. You know, and then you just start to stack orders. It just seems like, you know, you'll stack orders at, you know, 10% at 4, 10% at 4.15, 10% at 4.25. And I think farmers are pretty diligent about that. The issue is the market doesn't always get there.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you kind of have to have a clock involved in marketing as well. You know, are you looking at the calendar to make sure that you execute both old crop sales, and are we getting that stuff priced and cleaned out before a certain date? We like to talk about the 4th of July. And then for new crop as well, you know, if you're a 60% before harvest operation, you know, by the 4th of July, you should probably be pretty close to 60%.
Right, exactly. Take advantage of the spring planting scares, which the last couple of years have become pretty routine. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we don't see something happen this spring that would give us an opportunity again. Now, the question is, from what level does that rally start? We mentioned the insurance here a bit ago, too, the spring price is the average price of December futures in February, the average price of November bean futures in February. But it's an average price. So you don't want to be starting from 375 in the first of February and end up at 410 at the end of February, because bankers are going to be looking at that spring price and saying, guys, we're going to slow down. We're going to move some money around and do things differently. Don't you think?
I think so. And look at the bean market, you know, look at the new crop, you know, relationship and price. And it's at a 2.4 today, which traditionally says, you know, that's comfortable enough to plant beans. I think, you know, you get into the Eastern Corn Belt, you're on the river system. Seems like farmers can do a little better with beans that direction. But even in Nebraska and the Western Corn Belt, at that type of price relationship, you know, you're going to see bean acres bounce back next year, certainly. And you're going to have that input, you know, how many dollars are we spending to grow a crop play involved pretty heavily. So bean acres are going to snap back from 77 to 85 or 84 seems to be a lot of the popular picks in the early going.
Very good. Luke, thanks for coming down. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you again.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. That is Luke Beckman from Central Valley Ag in Elgin. Davis, we're about to sign off from Norfolk, but before we do, tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by Tweets, Cheats, and Shame. Has Andy Warhol never opined? Does Twitter imitate life, or does life imitate Twitter? And now today's tweets at Max ROI Farmer. Quick, everybody make a sarcastic tweet about your opinion on the trade deal and the markets going down afterwards. You know what? I'm going to leave Farm Her anonymous. Are you winning at parenting when your 2.5-year-old loudly announces to the other parents at preschool pickup, "My mom didn't shut that darn gate"? And just one more quickly, White Wheat tweet, the worst thing about baseball cheating is people tweeting about baseball in January.
Come on.
Opening
baseball's fun to talk about all the time. Pitchers and catchers, let's get ready. Come on now. All right, thank you, Davis. Thank you to WJAG and to TNL for having us back out here to Norfolk, Nebraska. We'll be back in the studio tomorrow morning. It's a free-for-all on AgriTalk.
You probably can't tell from the sound of it, but Simtrex is a different kind of dry fertilizer with new potential waiting to be harvested. Every dark compact granule is engineered to efficiently deliver slow-release bio-based nutrition that improves soil health and increases yields for a 3 to 5 times return on investment. Unleash the power of your land. Ask for Simtrex in your next blend or visit futureoffertilizer.com.
Attention landowners and farmers, the Conservation Reserve Program, CRP, is now open. CRP is a great alternative for difficult-to-farm acres. It improves farm profitability and delivers high-quality wildlife habitat, cleaner water, and healthier soils. The CRP sign-up is going on right now, but it ends on February 28th. Find a local Pheasants Forever biologist at pheasantsforever.org/CRP or visit your local USDA service center. Farm the best, CRP the rest. This message brought to you by Pheasants Forever. Thanks to Miravis Ace Fund Aside for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about pre-ordering Miravis Ace to get a head start on head scab control. Always read and follow label instructions.